It's Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody, if you're just getting up and joining us. Something that is, so there have been a lot of just craziness in America over the last, let's face it, year. But especially this week, we've got indictments, we've got guilty pleas, we've got tax bills getting passed at like 2 in the morning Eastern time. We've got Matt Lauer. We've got a lot of craziness going on. There's no doubt about it. So one thing that kind of got overshadowed, it's a softer story, but it's still a fun story and one that certainly captures the attention of the whole world when it happens. There is a royal engagement in Britain. Joining us on the phone is our old friend Julia McFarlane from the BBC. Hey, Julia, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Matt. How's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being with us. Usually we're talking about such serious stuff, and I don't know, maybe you do consider this serious stuff. For us, it's a lot of fun. Prince Harry finally got engaged to an American, Meghan Markle. This is going to help soften our relations, I think, Julia.
Well, it's funny you say that, Matt, because on Monday when this announcement was made, it was the newsroom was in this like honeymoon mode. Everyone was smiling. We were all, you know, taking our feet off the accelerator of all the, you know, North Korea and everything that was happening. And we were looking up, you know, what dress is she going to wear? When might she get married? What church will they choose? And this lovely period of sort of happiness and, you know, looking at happy things lasted a whole sort of 48 hours, I guess, until the president retweeted an extremist group. So it was lovely while it lasted.
So there is that. There's also that, you know, the president retweeted three videos from a British extremist group. I think the thing was it said Britain first and he's always America first. So he thought, hey, these are my kind of people. Probably not a lot of research went into that. And he just starts retweeting things. Your Prime Minister Theresa May scolded him for that, which he then promptly addressed and re-yelled back at the wrong Theresa May. So we had that going for us, too. We're really batting 1,000 this week.
Yeah, yeah. To go into that, I mean, there was Wednesday when we all woke up and saw the president had retweeted three tweets from the deputy head of Britain First, that really went down like a lead balloon. Just some background. Britain First is probably the most extreme far-right group in the UK. There are several fringe groups, but they are really considered as the most extreme in the UK. They are far too unpalatable for even the likes of UKIP and other sort of right-wing movements, anti-immigration movements in the UK. And particularly since last year, the Yorkshire MP Joe Cox was murdered by a white supremacist called Thomas Mayer, who shouted Britain First as he stabbed her outside her constituency meeting. So for Westminster, I mean, I was working in Westminster on that day that Joe Cox was murdered, and it was a day I will never forget in my career. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And it shook Parliament to the core. It was such a rare sort of event that kind of it united everyone across the chamber, both sides of the chamber. It was, you know, it was a very, very stark, horrible day. And so for the president of the United States to retweet these three tweets of this group was something that really was met with absolute consternation. And the Commons went to urgent questions that day on this. The Home Secretary took an urgent question on the state, on the US president's state visit as a response to this. And the words that we heard flying across the Commons that day with reference to President Trump, members of Parliament were calling him fascist. They called him stupid. They called him spreading evil. One MP said he is either racist, incompetent, ignorant, or all three. These are words spoken by actual members of Parliament in a parliamentary session about the President of the United States, the closest ally of the United Kingdom. It was really quite unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And then it was also sort of exacerbated after, well, Theresa May, she made a statement when she was on her visit to the Middle East, and she said it was her spokesman said it was wrong for him to have done that, to have retweeted this group. And then
which is pretty soft language. I mean, pretty, you know, I'm sure they debated it and they talked about how are we going to address this. And they did it in as nice of a way as humanly possible, quite honestly.
Well, she strongly, she strongly condemned the group. She said this group is abhorrent. They are completely against all of our principles. They are not British in their values. And then with reference to the president's tweet, her spokesman said that he should not have done that. And the next day, or later that night, and the next day when we all woke up, the following day, the president had, after one or two unsuccessful attempts to tag the right Theresa May in his tweet, he said, "Theresa May, don't focus on us. You know, focus on your own problem." And of course, everyone was in a tiz about this. And it was reported as the president sort of attacking Theresa May. I personally think actually Mr. Trump was quite measured in that tweet. We can take his tweets as official statements now, I think. As Theresa May was at pains to not, she had to make her position clear that she believed what the president did with Britain First was wrong. But also, President Trump, he does not beat around the bush. He wears his heart on his sleeve. And he has, used a lot of adjectives to describe his enemies, people he's angry with. And his tweet to Theresa May, personally, I think, showed a lot of restraint, actually. He has tended in the past, every now and then, quite often, to take criticism against him very personally and to react strongly to it. But I consider it to be a mild-mannered rebuke to Theresa May. He was just saying to her, don't focus on me, don't criticize me. I was retweeting videos about, the threat of Islamism as portrayed by Britain First in whatever crude way that they had portrayed this in these tweets.
Well, Julia, you're reading into his. His rebuke of her, because he didn't say all of that. He said, "Hey, we're doing just fine here. Worry about yourself." And you are showing such British kindness, the storied British kindness that we hear about, because you're being so measured and being, well, he really held back and he really just addressed. He was a jerk to Theresa May.
I think he did hold back. I absolutely think he did hold back. If we think of all the words that he uses to describe, some of the things he has said to
Kim Jong-un and others. Yes, absolutely. But Theresa May just said he shouldn't have done that. He knows he shouldn't have done that. And quite honestly, I do feel like if he would have been with Theresa May at a meeting or somewhere where they were just talking and he said, "Oh, you know what? This terror thing you guys are dealing with, we're dealing with it too. I'm going to show some of these videos that shows what's going on there." And then she would have said, "From who?" And he said, "Britain First." She would have said, "Oh my God, no, that's a crazy extremist group. You can't do that. Please don't do that. There's other ways." I believe that he would not have done it then. However, he didn't know. He did know, so he did it. And there's no way he's going to go, "Hey, I shouldn't have done that." Those words will never come out of his mouth. "Hey, I screwed up. Hey, I shouldn't have done that." Instead, he's a jerk to her back saying, "Hey, worry about yourself. We're fine here." I'm sorry, but that was... you're right. What's sad to me, Julia, is that you're like, "You know what? He was pretty good about that," because that is how far we have fallen.
Don't misunderstand me. The outrage caused on this side of the Atlantic with the president's tweets, which everyone said was, out of line, which if that tweet had come from any other president or state leader, then it would have been hugely controversial. But given the language we see him using every day, I think he held back on what he said. But he couldn't let it lie because of the nature of how he takes criticism as deeply personal. But I think if we look at his tweet, I think it is clear to him that he understands that he has a clash of principles with Prime Minister Theresa May, as Prime Minister Theresa May realizes, but these two leaders realize that, there is at the moment, they are in a way experiencing two sides of the same coin. Britain is currently dealing with the Brexit vote and with a mood in this country that is changing and that has gone against sort of you know, trends from the last year of what we have always seen of globalization as being a positive trend. We are seeing backlash of it. We are seeing populism. We are seeing all the rules being upended, as in the United States, which is why I think that Britain and what's happening in Britain and the national conversation in Britain when it comes to UKIP, Brexit, vote leave, why all of this is in the on Trump's radar in a way that all of these moods and these parts of the national dialogue were never picked up across in the US, because as close as we are as allies, our national conversation was never much interest to the United States. But yeah. President Trump, you know, he is friends with Nigel Farage. He's friends with Piers Morgan. He has been following Brexit, and he's been following what's happening in the UK, because he sees it as similar to what is, you know, to this, you know, this, you know, the mood in the US, which, you know, has shaken the country to its core from the election last year when all of the rules were broken. And so I think that if we look back at his tweet, I think he, yeah, I mean, come on, if you read it, it's different from his other angry tweets. He does actually sound like he's holding back quite a lot.
I know you see it that way, but to me, it's because she didn't say anything to him at all other than he should not have done that. I mean, that is such the minimal that could have been said. And so for him to be so flippant back drives me a little crazy. Like, hey, worry about yourselves. We're doing fine here. It's like, oh, come on, just shut up.
It could have been a lot worse.
Of course it could have been. But that's what's sad to me is that you guys are like lowering the bar enough that you're like, oh, well, it could have been worse. He could have been, you know, look at how he is to everybody else. Yeah. But
this is my interpretation. It was his tweets caused absolute consternation here.
Well, good.
And it was, this is just my thoughts that when I saw his tweet, I thought it made it clear that he does not get on with Theresa May on a personal level, but he held back quite a lot, I think.
Let me ask you one last question about that, because I really wanted to talk about the engagement. But those videos that he retweeted, were those real videos or those staged videos?
So one of them was utterly fake news. It was a video that appeared or purported to show from the caption, Muslim man beating up, Dutch injured man with crutches. And actually, that was total rubbish. It was both of the men in those videos were Dutch nationals born and bred in the Netherlands. And he was not even Muslim. And this was spelled out very clearly from the embassy, from the Netherlands embassy to the USA, which tweeted this and was like, this video is actually fake news. The man in this video was born in the Netherlands and was raised in the Netherlands and was not even a Muslim. So that was, you know, there is a danger when the president, who's got almost 50 million followers on Twitter, circulates false messages to his citizens, to people around the world, because people will take anything that he says as fact. And as a president who has said that he condemns fake news and he's against it, it was something that he should have looked at, should have wondered if it was real before sharing it. But will he start doing that in the future? Who knows? One can only hope.
Yeah. So the interesting thing that came out of this, I don't know how much you follow this, but I imagine you heard this too. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary, was asked about these videos being fake. And the response was, it doesn't matter if those videos were real. The threat is real. And that's how that was spun.
So she said, I'm not talking about the nature of the video. You're focusing on the wrong thing. The threat is real. And that's what the president is talking about. I mean, that was seen here as clearly the White House backtracking, realizing that, the video is fake, but not really wanting to admit that it had done anything wrong by circulating these videos. I mean, of course they wouldn't, because the video was fake news. And this is, this is a president who frequently calls out what he sees as the fake news and says you can't trust the mainstream media. And yet these groups that he that he endorses by sharing their content on Twitter are exactly what he is coming out and condemning.
Okay, let's get to the fun stuff. Meghan Markle, American, divorced, biracial, marrying Harry. What was the, I know that when the, it came out, you know, and I didn't even realize, I don't think most people in America really know Meghan Markle that well. She is an actress, but she's not a really famous one. She's definitely most famous now for dating Harry. She's in a show that's somewhat seen here, but it's not on a very popular network. It's it gets some press, but Meghan was definitely not a household name before Harry. And so most people didn't realize she was biracial or anything like that. And I think we're in an age where that's not cared about as much, certainly. And that's a good thing. But there was some consternation in Britain, we heard. I think more when they were dating at first. There was, didn't the palace have to come out with a statement about getting people to lay off of Meghan Markle?
Yeah, so they were, I think the first reports of them sort of going out were around about this time last year, and there was horrible stuff in the tabloids and online. I have to say, I hadn't come across any. The first I heard of Meghan Markle was when the palace had put out that statement. So because they had been, at the start of their relationship, they spent about 4 months in complete obscurity, and no one had found out about them. But it eventually, after a few months, they'd been found out, and there were sort of rumors spread like wildfire across the internet. And there was horrible, horrible things referencing her biracial heritage, the fact that she was a divorcee, the fact that she was American. And then the palace took this unprecedented step. And when that statement sort of dropped, it was just such a huge shock for all of us, because it was so unusual for the palace to come out like this and to come out with a statement also when the relationship is in such early days. So that also kind of signaled the importance and sort of the intensity of this relationship. And Prince Harry sort of issued this stark warning for the press to back off. And the relationship between the press and the royals here in the UK is obviously the family is of huge interest to everyone in this country. But we, of course, live in the shadow of what happened with Princess Diana. And so for the British press, even the tabloids, who get most of their circulation out of printing stories of the royal family, they do generally play ball with the royal family since the death of Diana because of this. And so even though there is just an absolute maelstrom of interest around Harry and Meghan, they are going to be followed round the clock. Hopefully that that conducive sort of relationship will continue to go forward. But it has been interesting because certain outlets here in the UK, I won't mention which ones, you could probably guess. Since the engagement, seeing how they have covered the royal engagement and going into a bit more about Meghan's background have been quite interesting, because Meghan is largely, I think she's largely very, very popular in the UK, actually. I think a lot of people see her as a breath of fresh air. I think Harry, who is the enfant terrible of the royal family, who, I mean, I can just to give you an example, my mother has often sort of, you know, said to me, "Oh, what are we going to do about Harry? He needs to find a wife." It's like she's talking about someone in our family, you know. She's like, "Oh, I just want him to find a lovely woman and settle down." And I think that's kind of how many people in the UK feel about her. I mean, the royal family is, I mean, it's a family that is familiar to everyone. And we feel like we know them. We've grown up with them.
Sure.
And, you know, and so that is why you get such familiarity with it. And so I think the fact that Harry has found a woman who has a name for herself in her own right. She is beautiful. She's just got a radiant smile. She has a history of activism from way before.
From when she was a child.
I read a story that she wrote a letter to First Lady Hillary Clinton when she was 11 because she was so offended that an advert for a soap manufacturer made it seem like women belonged in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, I love her. Like, as soon as I heard that, I thought that was, you know, that was a good sign.
Yeah, no kidding. And we would have never known that had this not all come about. I mean, she was an actress, a working actress of some renown, but not that famous. So now we hear she's going to retire from acting. She's going to move to England. She is going to, I believe, convert to the Church of England. Is that right? And then they'll be married at a chapel there?
So we all assumed that she was Catholic because she had gone to a Catholic college, and I think her father is Roman Catholic. But the palace put out a statement a couple of days ago saying that she was Protestant, but that she was going to be baptized and confirmed. So I think it's probably one of the, I think in that case she might have been born Protestant but has never been baptized.
Okay.
So.
And then they're going
to
live in...
I have to say, if she had been Catholic, that would have just been one other sort of thing, because there is a little bit of beef with the royal family marrying Catholics. I think legally they are able to now, but because the Queen is the head of the Church of England,
right?
That you'd have this sort of the triumvirate of Meghan being a divorcee, an American and a Catholic. So she at least has, she has one side that is slightly more acceptable to people who are a little stuck in the past. But, you know, I think this is wonderful. I think this is exactly, you know, the kind of thing that the monarchy really needs to stay relevant and to, you know, move into the 21st century. And I saw a tweet a couple of days ago, which I thought was actually quite astute. And it said, it referenced that Prince William married a commoner and Prince Harry is marrying a biracial American divorcee. Princess Diana is shaking the royal family from the grave. And I think what that sort of says to me is, I think it's absolutely true that it's the legacy of Princess Diana for raising these boys to know their own minds, to be true to themselves, and to, you know, take things in their stride. And I think the way, when William married Kate, that also caused a storm because she wasn't in the aristocracy. She was a commoner. She was someone in, you know, she was someone who he met at university. And she broke down those barriers first. And in a way, Kate sort of paved the way for Meghan to come through. So I think these two boys who've been raised by a strong, independent woman who knew her own mind, it's so reflected in the choices that they have made.
Well, and it's neat because I think it's important for everybody to believe that they can be royalty. And by marrying people outside of the traditional bounds, they have brought that back into a reality. And also, I think, you know, I didn't follow the royal family much at all here in America. Of course, Princess Diana, we did, and the wedding for them and everything. But Prince Charles was always over here seen as so stuffy. I knew nothing about if he did great charitable works his whole life. I didn't know about it. But with Prince Harry and Prince William, we hear so much about the work they're doing. They really have, at least from my mind over here, brought the royal family into the next century in a way that does help keep them relevant and important. And, you know, if you're going to be able to sort of, I think a lot of people look at the royal family sometimes as living off the public dime, but by doing such good works and by being such an important facet of British society for the rest of the world to see, I think it's amazing, you know, how, I mean, think about where we are right now, that there is a royal family that lives like they do. It's really like surprising in some ways. So I think they're doing a great job of at least from my small American mind over here, being very important.
They do. And the next time there is a massive argument about how much the renovation of Buckingham Palace is going to cost the taxpayer, or whether they're going to commission another royal yacht to the tune of tens of millions of pounds, and everyone starts complaining about why do we have a royal family, that's when the popular characters such as William, Kate, Harry and Meghan will sort of be the monarchy's sort of ace of spades. But they are... The monarchy is largely popular in the UK. There are, you know, of course, sort of very Republican oppositions to the royal family as an institution, but they are largely very popular in the UK. And I think mostly over the years that's been down to the leadership of the Queen.
Yeah.
So, but with regards to Meghan, I think the fact that she is who she is, I think, is such a wonderful step. And saying this as myself, as a mixed race girl growing up, there were no role models who fit my background. There were no women in the public eye or even in movies. There weren't even any fictional mixed race women that I could have looked up to, right? And I think the fact that Megan is someone who has a diverse background, who came from an ordinary family and has made this journey and is becoming literally an American princess. Not formally, she will most likely be a duchess, but I think she will always be known to you guys across the pond as their American princess, as their Grace Kelly of the 21st century.
Yeah.
I think a lot of little girls will look up to her and think, you know, anything is possible. And isn't that exactly the American dream?
It is. It is. Although it's weird for us to say right now, Julia, that we want our little girls looking up to somebody who became a princess, because we don't want them to think that's what they need to be, right? So there's that on the one side,
yeah,
and then there's
course.
The other side of that too. I want her to become princess and then go kick ass and like raise money and do great things and conquer the world, not just, you know, have babies and be in the background. And I imagine
it's a different world. Which is actually what you're going to do. But I hate to break it to you, Matt, but most young girls, when they're,
still
when they're
be
young,
princesses.
We all want to be princesses when we're that age. When we're teenagers, we want to be president or we want to be prime minister. But when we're little kids, we watch Disney films and we all want to be Tinkerbell and princesses.
Well,
so.
and that's okay. We still need to get to be kids okay. at some point in our lives. Absolutely. Because there's so much going on when we get older. Enjoy those young years while we can. Julia McFarlane from the BBC. Follow her on Twitter. She's a great follow and a great reporter for the BBC. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for jumping on today.
Nice to see you, Matt.
You too. We'll talk to you soon. Julia at the BBC. Follow her on Twitter at Julia McFarlane.